That's a great question.
Here I am as Miss Kentucky, competed in Miss America, and it's been really an amazing journey.
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky.
And he said to me, science is cool, learning is fun. That's what we do.
All the schools in Kentucky present a power word presentation, which talks about verbal bullying, negative perceptions in hip-hop, how to challenge our peers when they use negative words. At the end of the day, words do matter, and it's a catalyst for action.
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on.
We'll be getting back out to playing live, but some places that I do like playing here in Lexington.
I tend to focus on local issues, local people, you know, local being Kentucky.
So we've got these various battles raging between the Attorney General and the governor, and in the background is the former governor.
This is a myth that is really common.
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection.
An extreme yeast infection.
If you can't deep fry it, spray paint in gold.
Now, will the animal send you like a postcard as a thank you with a little paw print on it?
Who's at fault more, men or women?
The vetting process. Did you already ask that? Okay.
It works. Ram, piano.
Hey everybody, it's Friday and it is noon and you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from a slightly drizzly north side of Lexington, Kentucky. I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And we're with you as we are every Friday from noon to 2, bringing you some lovely interviews with some awesome folks doing amazing things with a unique connection to Kentucky. And today in the studio, we have a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you so much, Chuck, Ben. I am State Representative Kelly Flood from the 75th District. And just briefly saying, that is my primarily downtown area of Lexington. And in my fifth term, so just about 9 years of service.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for the service to the Commonwealth.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here today with you, with the listeners.
Absolutely. And so, Kelly, you're here as well as part of our fundraiser that we have going on this month. So Have Your Say in May is what we're calling it. So we're letting people from all over, from anywhere, have their say on the radio. So if you go to gofundme.com/LCRMay, you can give a donation to Lexington Community Radio, which we're totally funded through underwriting, grants, and donations. So if you do that, you can request a song, you can request an interview, all kinds of cool stuff.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for coming in, Kelly. We appreciate it.
And I am glad to come in, especially when fundraising is happening, as nonprofits know, but more of us who are independently engaged in work understand that when you invite support, people who have the same values, the same commitments, step up and give support. So glad to be here and know that I, as a state representative, will also be making a contribution of $100 to lead us out. Excellent. So if anybody out there wants to call and match that, they ought to feel free.
That would be great. Thank you, Kelly.
You're
we
so
appreciate
welcome.
It. And we can't do it without you physically, you know, literally we can't.
Yes.
So so Kelly, just to get things started, I want to ask you, first of all, where are you from originally?
I was raised in the military. My dad was Air Force, so was my mother. So that means that I was born in California, but pretty soon moved to Germany when I was a child, to a small little town called Eichensel, where I lived from 3 to 6 years old and spoke German when I was a child then. So after Germany, though, we moved to Tampa, Florida, and that's where our family settled in for Florida became home for years. Tampa, Miami, then finally Tallahassee, which is where I did my young adult work post-college as an aide to a state representative and got the bite for politics.
That's great. And where did you go to college?
I went to Florida State
during
the Bowden years, for anybody who's a big football fan. And was, I mean, that was...
I think Ben has something to say about that.
I won't hold that against you.
Well, were you a Gator or...
Neither. Just all things Florida. I just had to, I was state bound, duty bound, honor bound to just dislike all teams from Florida, all teams from Tennessee, from Indiana.
Well, at least
just
he's
not
a
allowed.
True fan. I don't, I can figure out there, but I would tell you that having come out of there, at least I'm not a gator is the way I look at it. Mm. I am a knoll, and that makes right. a difference.
Well, huge difference.
Yeah. I think hurricane might be the worst.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah,
one.
For sure.
Okay, can we yeah, all we can
that?
All agree.
We can all agree on that.
You know, I love the natural beauty of Florida, and I think that gets underrated a lot. The state parks in Florida
agree.
Are incredible.
And is where I was spent a lot of my years in Florida was mostly in Tallahassee, yeah. actually. And Tallahassee, Florida, and Lexington, Kentucky mimic one another. Mm-hmm. Tallahassee is a state capital. Ours is near it. Mm-hmm. But the natural beauty around Tallahassee and Tallahassee proper of the stunning oaks mm-hmm. with all of that Spanish moss,
yeah.
there is nothing more beautiful. And the canopy roadways in Tallahassee. So it's used to be home, but to be honest with the people here, once we got to Lexington, this became home for us. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't born here, but got here as soon as I could.
Definitely. I'm in the same boat.
I
so
love
I'm right
it
there
here.
With you.
Just love it.
So what did you major in college down at Florida State?
Was one of the first. I'm 58, mm-hmm. and so that was one of the first degrees being offered across our country at the time, interdisciplinary, mm-hmm. American Studies.
Oh, cool.
So I featured the revivalist theological movement that swept this country. That was a big part of the study and work that I did when I was there. And I ended up going on to seminary, which we can touch on later.
Sure.
But the other piece is that I also then studied this whole political analysis of the United States of America and its history, really focused in on American history.
Mm-hmm.
And for now, being somebody who loves politics and always has loved history, that knowledge helps me a lot in understanding a bit more of what we're even going through now as a country. It gives me some perspective.
Yeah, certainly very complicated, mm-hmm. unprecedented.
Yes, but thank God not without a lot of similarities to many different eras and that we've survived everybody that we have survived.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, Kelly, after college, can you explain kind of how you came to Lexington?
Yes, to what I now call home. Well, the short version of the story is after college, I was in Tallahassee, which I had been in, going to high school and college, mm-hmm. and got my first job post-college as an aide to a state representative mm-hmm. who was from Miami. Mm-hmm. So I moved to Miami, but was soon working during legislative sessions, mm-hmm. which are like ours,
yeah.
every year at the beginning of springtime or in springtime. I would move back to Tallahassee where I was from, but then had moved also to Miami. And that was a wonderful place to be as a young person. And I was coming off of having been an activist in the National Organization for Women throughout college. So right after having been an aide, I also had spent some time working in the now organization down there for reproductive justice work. So we did a lot of good work there in the early days. That time in Florida, that exposure to public life, working for a state representative for 3 years, led me to say what I'd want to do now is go to law school, get a degree, and have something where no matter where I lived, I could make sure I financially could pay my way, and then run for office. That was the game plan. But on my way to seminary, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I
no.
said it.
No worries.
I just said it. On my way to
the
there it is. I ended up instead being told by a new but lifelong friend now, new friend then, that really making a mistake with law school. It is not who you are. And at that time, the man I was dating, who would later become my husband, Neil Chethick, who runs the Carnegie Center.
Shout out to Neil.
He and I had started to attend. He's Jewish. I was raised Catholic. A place where we could both come with that history, a Unitarian Universalist church. We were looking at that point, sort of found one another. Now we were both finding a place we could deepen ourselves. And this community was a place for both of us to feel very at home because it's grounded in principles that gather, not theological beliefs that are similar. So it allows you to sit next to somebody with different theological beliefs, but your principles are very similar around reason and freedom of religious expression and a deep commitment to science and the use of reason that, when approaching religious matters.
Yeah, that kind of polytheistic embrace.
That's exactly it. So that got us then to move to California. Mm. That's a long-winded way, but I ended up choosing, instead of going to law school, I decided to go to seminary. Nice. And ended up in a seminary out in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Cool. For a Unitarian seminary there. And when I got out of school, the church that called me was here in Lexington.
That's awesome. So yeah. When did you start there?
I came in the 1990s, very beginning of the 90s. And Neil and I were newly married as well. And he had left journalism. He was a journalist with Knight Ridder newspapers. Mm-hmm. So when he moved here, he thought he'd get some Knight Ridder, used to own Herald Leader.
Yeah.
But instead what he did is he gave up his day job as a reporter and became a columnist on his own, entrepreneurial move, cool. Became self-employed. And I was the minister at the Unitarian Church for almost 8 years. And during that time, we had what turned out to be our only child, Evan, mm-hmm. who's now 24.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'll
off
pause
to, off
there.
To school.
Exactly.
Okay. Nice.
But coming to the Unitarian Universalist Church is the time when I fell in love with this town and thought I would be here just a normal period of time. You come, you serve.
Certainly.
I helped them build a new wing to the church. It was where I learned a lot of fundraising skills, actually. fundraising at that time, I just want to remind everybody why everybody does fundraising now today. It's important because I ended up going on to not help the church, only help the church raise the 6 to 8 million we needed to do to get that job done, total monies. But then went over and the seminary that I used to work for, that I attended, they called me back to work for them as their lead fundraiser. So, and I did that for 12 years.
Wow.
I'm leaping around a little bit. It's a whole time in my life when I made fundraising a focus. The thing to remember about it is, as the era of Roger Ailes,
mm-hmm.
who, of course, we know died,
yeah.
and Fox News, and before him, mm-hmm. Lee Atwater,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
who was as notorious as Ailes mm-hmm. for vitriol,
yeah.
as the campaign, political right, and definitely embraced by Republicans, mm-hmm. strategy for winning. They basically would tear you up. There was mm-hmm. no character left from mm-hmm. From the work when they were done. That era was also linked to a time when we began to cut off public funding for the arts. We started with the arts because mm-hmm. of fantastic artists like Mapplethorpe.
Yeah, right.
Who were, those pictures were, to the average attendant at a museum, or of course they were radical, and they were art.
Mm-hmm.
So that we were in a society that doesn't shut down art because we believe in radical place, contained in a proper place in a museum for everybody to then debate and argue over is healthy for cultures and democracies.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a time when the Republicans making that vitriol pitch start to really pull back on all kinds of public funding.
Mm.
And it led to organizations like ours and all the way now to even public schools because of the influx of private dollars taking public dollars for private schools.
Mm.
Now you will hear public schools doing fundraisers for teachers so that they can have enough money in their pockets to pay for basic supplies. I want to make that link so everybody understands that it was an abdication of responsibility on the part of government, led by the Republican message of vitriol, that set a framework that said taking care of each other and needing one another and paying taxes together is evil, is wrong, is damaging, is something human beings can't handle. And I would completely beg to differ. So give your dollars now, but put pressure on legislators like me to also make those kinds of commitments like arts and public schools and public universities something we all pay for together, public health care.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, Kelly. I think the privatization of media,
it
really allows for no substance of regulation or of standards. So that's really the issue.
And that's the issue.
And that's why I think in a lot of ways radio died.
think there's so much truth to that.
Yeah, and so that's why I think places like here, Lexington Community Radio and NPR, you know, WKY, WKU, WRFL, our other non-commercial stations here in town are so vital to tell our story and to offer something different and educate folks about real opinions and really what's happening.
That's exactly right.
So thank you for saying that. I think that's great.
Good.
So Kelly, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Universal Unitarian Church. Can you explain to people a little bit more about that?
Like, absolutely.
If people are out there and they're feeling a little weird about their church, and maybe they're looking for something a little more accepting.
Oh, let me tell you about Unitarian Universalism. The basic premise behind this faith tradition, which is 500 years old in our knowing of religious history, came to this shores, has a uniquely Unitarian and Universalism came as two separate faith traditions to this to these shores, and has a unique history with America, the blending of the two. What they did is held the notion that we could sit side by side and not have the same theological belief, but gather around the principles of the use of reason in religious matters, most simply a defining core, because then we embraced all the science that was happening. And secondly, that we were free to express our religious beliefs and difference in religious beliefs, and that we would always have each other's back in doing it, which is why you see UU's out on the front lines when Muslim communities are under attack instead of criminal terrorist activities, right? And people linking the two completely unfairly in the deep sense of the word, that church communities have a right to exist and freely express their religion. And then the third is the a commitment to an ecological relationship with the earth that recognizes that we're profoundly interdependent. So it's a relevant faith tradition, but I would tell you, because it's a liberal one, it's got small numbers, 250,000 people nationwide, globally maybe double that.
Right.
However, when you speak to people about those principles, many share those principles. So UUs have been on the forefront often of leading significant social justice, economic justice, and ecological justice issues because their value systems line up well. The other thing I would say is it is one of the few faith traditions that has legitimately ordained gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgendered people since the for 30 years now, especially in the last 7 or 8 years, to be fair, with transgendered. Like everybody else, we've had to come on our own pacing, but we've been leading the way. Unitarian Universalism also has one of the best young people's sensual and sexual education courses that you can send your kid to. It's so real and grounded, and the conversations that they would bring home, our kids would bring home to us after they'd been in this, and it's for middle schoolers, which is a great age. And then the other thing that UUs do very well is they have been ordaining women for since the 1850s, good people. So they figured out a long time ago that power needs to be shared, needs to be diverse, and women need to be a part of the main structure.
Well, that's great, and I think that acceptance is vital, and it's a huge need of what, you know, especially from an ecological standpoint, you know. How can you simultaneously believe in a doctrine that says you have to be stewards of the earth, you've inherited this natural landscape from God, but also at the same time you're rallying your constituents to deregulate, you know, poison being put in the water, literally put in the water of where you live and where your constituents live.
Is why I don't believe that business principles, where you do have to put the stockholders' return as one of the most fundamental bottom lines for most businesses now. There are more businesses that have added to that bottom line a bit, but the premise still is, and especially short-term corporate interests are to that shareholder. Because of that, when people say we need to bring the brilliance of business into government, the mistake people make is forgetting that the reasons regulations exist is because businesses don't abide by the communal need for fresh water, air, and land when they are making that profit historically. And we're not making this up. I mean, this is historically the case, and it has not fundamentally changed, though I think awareness grows Of course awareness has grown, and you can see it in young people's businesses especially. I always want to give credit there. But what matters then is if, say, you were talking to the governor of the Commonwealth, say, I think an important question always is for somebody who puts forth his faith tradition as he does. The modern Christian today is completely aware of a stewardship of the earth as a theological mandate now. And you can't gloss over it anymore by, it's not happening. All the latest deep Christian thinkers, which is where the governor, I think, would place himself, are recognizing a radical awakening around preserving the earth's resources that are being depleted. And Kentucky could be on the front leading on, say, a carbon tax, which, remember, was a Republican idea until the Democrats embraced it, and then it became a devil idea. But it is, in fact, a very sound way to move as even coal industry diversifies its base of how it's making profits and starts to, I mean, that's how they're making it. Those who are diversifying are making it. We could, that's a natural moment to go ahead and tap into resource taxes. So I think we've, and it also, think about it, it also is an affirmation to the pressures he might find from the coal industry to say that kind of tax recognizes the years of commitment you've had to the state and you have said is your top priority in leaving it better than how you found it. And at this moment, more than ever, demonstrate that love of community you purport to have for these miners and their families and our beautiful, beautiful Commonwealth.
Well, I think a lot of people out there right now are kind of scared about the economic climate and the job climate out there. And people in western, eastern Kentucky, where the coal industry used to be big, they don't see any other option. Somebody comes along and says, I want to bring coal back to your communities. They may not be thinking about the long-term damage of what they're doing. They just know they need to put food on the table and pay rent and pay their mortgages. Is there any, what other industries could we bring to the state that might be better, that might have longer-term employment and better benefits?
With the work right at the end of Bashir and then Hal Rogers, when Hal Rogers really wasn't actually bringing home the dollars like he used to because there was this big stopping of all those dollars. Remember, I talked about it earlier. It included big projects in even eastern Kentucky. When that was all on pause, they came up with SOAR, as you all are aware of. I can't pull it out of me, but Appalachian Region New Investments. One of the smartest things they actually did is get a language of diversification of economy going on. I tell you, when you go now into Pikeville, which I've done numerous times as a state rep because of my deep ties to the entire state, loving it, is I have heard and seen the development of this trail system. Now, some ATV trails, horse trails, extensive. Finally, a network of trail system that is bringing in real dollars of tourism that before they didn't have. They just didn't have it. They weren't there. That's developing, as are some of the hotels and then restaurants that come around that. Slow, but it's there. The second significant shift that's occurred is they've really developed their optometry school out there. It's now considered a darn good one. All of the ancillary businesses that go around that now big building to optometry and the students coming in is another pocket of real economy, which is why Governor Patton said early on he wanted universities placed there, and Pikeville's fought to have a University of Pikeville, though, I have to say. Some of us even resisted that definition, but I understood what the argument was. Then the last piece that's happened out in the East that's been important is, and it's just getting, it's, this is why I'm frustrated with the current administration's language. People were weatherizing as a business, and May said was behind a lot of this, and some grant dollars did come in, and they were using that as a model for how we take people formally with coal industry and now preparing them for 21st century living, taking these homes that are not weatherized. My own home is not weatherized properly, but doing it as a business with grant dollars to start and showing that a little bit of went a long way to give a lot of people jobs and lower gas bills, lower all kinds of bills.
For sure.
So that three-pronged approach is actually, for the first time, made a dent. Now, into that comes the myth that the reason the coal industry has gotten stuck is because of regulations, this whole business angle, mm-hmm. which is a big lie. It really is a big lie, good people. Not that lies aren't believable. We all know we've believed lies before. Let's not kid ourselves, okay? We've all believed them. And this one was told by people who historically had, in fact, helped you pay your bills. Mm-hmm. So I understand how the big lie got started. But the big lie was that, in fact, regulation was killing the industry when it has been the influx of natural gas mm-hmm. and the ability to provide it cheaply and the technological advances, especially now that we have the cloud since 2007, that has blown everything into new proportions. And work life is becoming computerized. Anything that can be is. And any way we can have natural gas does. And last thing, to all of us, right, middle, left, we all said together, no matter what our political bent was, we wanted to break our hold, our needing of Saudi Arabian oil, especially. And especially since they were the ones who kept sending people here that truly were doing us harm, we wanted to break that. Mm-hmm. And folk don't like to remember, but it really was under Obama that we broke that. And we did it through natural gas. I have real problems with fracking, mm-hmm. but I will tell you, if it helped us break our hold on coal, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. We've made progress in this state, but we bought the lie that it's regulations.
Yeah, and Kelly, you're on the Natural Resources and Energy Committee, correct?
Just got there.
Nice. What do you think is, how do you feel is the current state of what that is like?
Just got there. And this is what I know for my work in that area. In this state, as a woman from Lexington, those two things being relevant, mm-hmm. women in the legislature from Lexington commenting on coal issues was usually not effective other than talking to my base, mm-hmm. okay, which surely mattered, don't get me wrong. But it was not good for making things happen differently, mm-hmm. right? That downturn in the economy was terrible on all of us, but it also helped us break this, finally reveal what was going on in coal. So today, now that I've been put on there, I find that interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, I have noticed, though, that they put me on natural resources. Mm-hmm. They put Gooch back on his chair. But the real energy conversations are no longer going on there. Mm. It's going on in a new committee they've created. Pay attention.
Subcommittee?
No.
Or not even.
A whole new committee called Energy and Economic, or something, Economic Development, I think.
That's how new it is.
That's how new it is. You nailed it. And that is where you have all of the bills that have to do with regulation around energy and all the natural resources stuff. First of all, the committee hardly meets. Mm-hmm. And if it meets, it is on one thing I am fascinated in, and that's the PSC. Mm-hmm. PSC issues have to go there.
What is PSC?
That is the Public Service Commission that oversees the public utilities. Mm. And I still have great faith and ability. I think governments can do some things very, very well, because we understand a business model that has not profit as our bottom line, but bettering communities for human beings to live in. That's a very different kind of bottom line. And public utilities are that network devoted to that, and the Public Service Commission is one way we helped manage them. There's been a lot of influx of private enterprises' influence on that over the years, but at the same time, it's also been able to hold a pretty good public care management. Mm. So,
nice. Well, just in case you're joining us, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU, LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. And I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And we're here in the studio with 75th District Kentucky House Representative Kelly Flood, chatting about all things Kentucky. And a lot of different issues, and I would love to get into some more, but I also want to let people know they can call in if they have any questions. The number is 859-721-5690. That's 721-5690, and people can make requests, or
good.
You know, or they can call in with questions if they have any.
And that one thing there too, sure. Since I put in $100 last time, and you said we could ask for a song. I think I'd like to have some. Percy Sledge, if we've got that. And then Neil Chethick of the Carnegie Center, the executive director of the Carnegie Center, which is this fabulous learning and literacy center in downtown Lexington, devoted to bettering community and providing affordable and at times even free reading and learning classes and programs, is offering another $100.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Neil, and thank you to the Carnegie Center, the real literary soul of our state.
Yeah,
it's a pretty cool place.
Yeah,
I think that's awesome. And we're actually hosting a radio camp at the Carnegie Center in July. Yeah, to teach kids how to produce their own show and also their own podcast. So, once again, working together.
The only Percy Sledge I've got is the When a Man Loves a Woman. Chuck, do you have anything else up there?
What is wrong with that one?
We've heard it a million times. Let's hear it again.
Let's hear it again. Right. That's a There's classic. Nothing. That one, it's meant to be heard a million times.
Are you dedicating this song to Neil, Kelly?
There you go.
Excellent.
Actually, you know who I'm going to dedicate it to, if I may?
Sure, please.
Is to the last $50 I have here in cash to an anonymous fabulous friend of mine who it happens to be her favorite song, which is why I had it on my mind. All right, so there we go.
I take it back.
Well, we'll be back here in a minute with Kelly Flood. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios. Here's some Percy Sledge.
He'll change the world for the good thing he's found. If she is bad, he can't see it. She can do no wrong.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU FM here on the north side of Lexington, Kentucky. I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And we're here in the studio with Kelly Flood.
Good to be here.
Thanks for coming, Kelly.
Very good.
So, Kelly, you initially got involved in Frankfort in 2009, correct?
That's correct.
And you took over the House seat for Kathy Stein when she decided to run for the U.S. Senate, correct?
That's exact. For what happened is that Governor Bashir, appointed Kathy Stein to the Senate when an opening occurred there, and that was after the primary had happened. So she'd run in the primary as to run for the House again, gets this appointment, and then I was approached to run for the general election state rep seat and won that and took over after Stein had been a state rep for 14 years. Mm-hmm. And just prior to her, of course, had been Ernesto Scorsone, now Judge Scorsone. He was in for 14 years. And a reminder that the 75th District also has a former Speaker of the House, the Kenton, Bill Kenton, in the 80s. And when he died unexpectedly in office as Speaker, we lost the only Speaker we'd had from here, his wife, Carolyn, had the seat for legitimately ran for it and won it two terms. And finally, this seat, of course, was held by Henry Clay way back when. Mm-hmm. So it's a historical
Who
seat.
Is Henry Clay? I don't.
I've never heard of him.
Well, he's a real up-and-comer, yeah. He's a great friend of ours.
It's the name of a school building.
Yeah. He is the thing to remember most, dear people, is that he is the one who taught this country a lot about compromise, and I wish his student, one who likes to say he's a student, Senator Majority Mitch McConnell, would remember that that word actually has great relevance at this point in time and not keep digging his heels in. But.
True. Well, Kelly, can you tell us a little bit more about the 75th? What are the boundaries and what's within the 75th District?
It's downtown Lexington on up to about 6th Street over and cuts on down to Jefferson, swoops around and captures Rupp Arena. Heads on south there and takes in Red Mile, continues on down and connects its tail southern end is the lovely Southland district and comes up Southland and cuts over and just does a little bit of Chevy Chase, and rounds right up, pardon me, right up there to beautiful Ellesmere Park.
Mm, excellent.
Yes.
Yeah, and so I wanted to, so you've lived there since 1991, correct?
Correct.
So you know the district well.
Yes.
And so I wanted to ask you kind of about this year's legislative session in Frankfort. You know, what were some victories that you felt, and also what were some losses that you felt through this past legislative session?
Very good. Well, for transparency, those of you who haven't figured out, I'm a Democrat, and those who were tracking recognize that the Democrats lost control of the House, the last remaining Democrat-controlled House, State House in the South. Mm-hmm. Now all of them are run by Republicans, yeah. Both the Senate and the House, and all have Republican governors.
It's the first time in 95 years.
Correct.
So it's pretty
in our state, it's significant. And the coattails of Trump absolutely made a significant dent, because we didn't just lose, that Democrats lost significantly in the House. There's now 64 Republicans and 36 Democrats, when we used to be almost just two or three apart. Mm-hmm. So that being the case, when the Democrats were in control prior to that, I happened to have chaired the budget subcommittee. I'm on appropriations and revenue, one of the few women on it, but I chaired the budget subcommittee on preschool through high school education. And now that I am a Democrat in the minority, I have retained my seat on appropriations and revenue, which was a good thing. I really fought for that and was given that. And they then decided also to put me back on the subcommittee I used to chair, which is unusual. But it was a good sign to me that they knew they could work with me, which is true.
That's great.
I'm passionate about education.
That's awesome. And yeah, and speaking of education, can we talk a little bit about charter schools and House Bill 520 and 471?
Yes.
You know, what do you think of charter schools, and what's trying to be initiated in Frankfort through those bills?
I remind you, I put two budgets together on education. Mm-hmm. So I now understand what charters was doing to that process.
What is charter school? I guess for folks that don't know.
Or just at least, what's the difference between a charter school and a public school?
One of the most significant differences is that charter schools are more often than not private schools. Mm-hmm. Some are not. Mm-hmm. Most are. Companies run them. Mm-hmm. That send teams of people in to open the school.
So not Fayette County Public Schools, just school incorporated.
Fayette County can. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come back to that. I'm trying to tell people what they are.
Sure.
So what they, and they also are schools that often have been completely let off the hook of all kinds of accountability measures that everybody calls regulation, but in fact is a way that we've brought everybody up to common standards and those kinds of things. But let me say this, it's so important to understand about why I voted no for 520 and advocated against charter schools strongly. We have them already. We have Carter G. Woodson Academy, a public charter school created by Fayette County Public School System, where we elect people to serve on that, and they approved it. They designated dollars out of our budget already. We didn't have to create a whole new entity, which now exists. I'll come back to that. And what we have now, Carter G. Woodson Academy, the STEAM Academy, where we are housed here on this radio station, is a public charter school already. And why the big difference? It's simple. Corporations making a boatload of money on the charter school movement has now gotten through almost every state legislature, and we were a holdout. And we have a businessman for a governor who believes that business is how to solve all problems. I don't believe that as the only. In fact, I'm convinced that governing is a unique way of solving problems that we need to all remember as citizens and keep it alive and well and healthy. It's called democracy. And that said, these schools now are able to take public dollars, which has a small pool of dollars, and siphon them off to these schools that don't have to follow the rules like everybody else. Mm. In our state, over 30 years, we've been on the forefront of education reform. We were ordered to do so by our own Supreme Court 30 years ago. Mm. Had we not spent 30 years investing now $30 billion over those years in innovation in the classroom, in teacher accountability, in testing that allowed us to know where every student who was struggling is, we wouldn't be where we are, which has gone from the bottom of the barrel to the middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. People wonder how we did that. The kids worked their butts off, and so did we, and we paid for it.
Yeah.
So if we hadn't done that and weren't known as being an innovative state, then I would say, look, we have problems. Maybe we're not really equipped to do this. Let's bring in some fresh ideas. Mm. That's not the case in Kentucky. And the chronic problem with achievement gaps that we hear about that are real, opportunity gaps that are real, is a systemic question in this country about what we do with poverty and its impact on learning. Mm. That's what we're dealing with. And we haven't as a country figured that out yet entirely. I have some real ideas about it. I intend to file a bill next year that gets at it, and look forward to that work. But I'll tell you, charter schools did not and will not solve any of the problems that it was purported to bring here. But I want people to know this. In spite of the fact that it's here, the pendulum swings. Our public schools are in our Constitution. You cannot take away the right of public schools to exist and our right to pay for them, our mandated to pay for them. So don't ever forget, constitutionally, public schools exist in Kentucky stronger than many other states. And even if the privates come in, at some point down the way, if you all vote smart, we can get some folk in there who reminds us all that, yeah, you can have a few of these money schools, but most of us are going to stay in public schools together.
That's great. And Kelly, what percentage of that $30 billion investment was towards just regulation?
Accountability. And really, let's be clear, it was known as accountability structures because it helped us to learn.
Yeah, I'm just using the semantics.
Good. Well, let's think about it. If we did $1 billion a year for 30 years, these are rough numbers, but they're honest numbers. I looked them up. Then we've spent $30 billion, and a third of that has done accountability. That is $10 billion that we've spent on it. And that's why we should not be letting off anybody off that hook, because we've agreed about why we spent that money over the years, and we agreed as Democrats and Republicans together, and not one Democrat, not one, voted for charter schools in this state. So that was the thing I said to my colleagues. You guys, we have been doing education together for 30 years. We have a record of it. And you're following this administration this time, who's not seen what we've done as legislators, really, understood it or valued it. And we've just given up our legislative ability to work together on education through this, with 15 pages of new regulations.
Wow, 15 pages?
Of new regulations that create boards that have to be paid for, people whose new jobs have to be to make sure that they don't have to follow all these regulations. They actually have to hire people to make sure they don't. Look at all you don't have to do. I mean, it's really a ridiculous endeavor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what have been some successes of this legislative session that you feel like?
One real success is, and it's going to be with us, it continues to be, in spite of the pressure from Washington, that it's all hands on deck around the opiate crisis. All hands on deck. Because it does now finally cross class lines, and that tends to get everybody's attention. It's occurred. And the way we're approaching it is finally bringing the best practices models, which are rooted in an enormous revitalization of local health measures. People are understanding addiction, again, as a health crisis, not a criminal crisis. And you're going to see legislation, especially out of Speaker Hoover. I want to speak well of the new speaker, who is leading now, a Republican. He's a legislator's legislator. He's been in the House for 26 years, and his parents were both in before him. And he has gotten a real clear understanding of the need for affordable treatment centers. So you're going to see some good work from last session and coming up on that end that will make us proud.
That's great. And I think I also wanted to ask kind of about energy in Kentucky. Was that brought up in this session, kind of?
In ways that are not helpful.
I guess particularly as far as, you know, renewable energy and sustainability with solar power and wind. Did that come up at all during this past legislative session in any substantial way?
I can't say not at all, but I would tell you it's still a sidestepping going on. However, there was an interesting moment. It's another point in which I voted no, but it mattered, I thought, because what happened was there was a bill to say that Kentucky no longer had a moratorium on the storage or on building a nuclear facility mm-hmm. once storage could be rectified in the region.
Mm-hmm.
We're no longer have a moratorium on it. Well, we still haven't rectified storage in the region.
And it's in Richmond. Right, the largest.
Well, very good. And the last time, this was out west, though. This would really impact out west.
Mm-hmm.
It would end that moratorium, which is where Maxi Flats. Well, actually, it wasn't near there, but it's mm-hmm. from that whole experience. We would be opening up our whole state again when we had been the hub of storage of waste for a while,
mm-hmm.
and we had that disaster that we just really finally cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
So they decide though to open it up again. Make it possible to bring that back in.
It's to raise funds, I guess.
The reason why there's a happy note is it was the first time I saw Representative Gooch mm-hmm. and a number of other core Republicans stand up and make a pitch for some other facility other than a coal field.
Mm.
And I had to point it out to him. I said, look at this. You're finally thinking outside the box. And I know it made him nervous to say it. So I think sometimes, even if it's not entirely in my worldview of how I do it,
uh-huh.
you got to say, that's right, shake it loose.
Yeah, and it seems like that's the best way. It's kind of, nationally, but also in Frankfurt, too, we're kind of at this quagmire where, our political philosophies are so different
and
there's so much obstructionism.
You have to find common ground in any way. I am committed to my... As we begin to wrap up, let me say that I feel strongly as a state rep that while I am a feminist and some would say a real liberal, I want you to know that I govern from the center. I find where my values and the work I want to see bumps up well against my conservative counterparts and look for places to work together. I like results.
Yeah.
I like results.
Give a shout out to the Lexington Fayette County Health Department for their needle exchange program.
It's
talking about
superb.
The opiate addiction statewide, and I know they're reaching out to other counties in Kentucky too to kind of show them the success of their model and how they can implement it. So
that's right.
I appreciate that in Frankfurt, speaking of working together, there are problems that are bigger than politics that people have to intervene and have to work together because the world's on fire outside of their door.
And I would ask all of us to remember that we do need each other. No matter what, in the end, we actually need each other. I have said that time and again. I thought I had great ideas until I got into the legislature and began to hear some from across the aisle that when you put them together with mine, too, could really be something.
Mm.
But that inability to just dissing the... And I would say I found it happen more from the right to the left. They would not consider a liberal idea.
Mm.
It was truly, truly... a mistake, I thought, because many conservative ideas had been taken into consideration by liberals especially in the state.
So what more can Democrats do to sort of get their messages out there and motivate people, get them to go show up to vote?
I think what matters now, because I know a lot of younger people are beyond even wondering how to ensure Democrats thrive, is to look for opportunities. This is how I put it. If you're young, if you're African American, if you're female, or if you're all three of those, terrific. But if you're any of those, get out, get active, and run for office. Because here's how we're going to change things. We're actually going to win offices and vote people out. Because the truth is, with the death of someone like Inales,
mm-hmm.
at this moment, when we finally have a prosecutor who we all know, we can all look and say we trust that finally we're going to get to the bottom of what's happening with our country, that we're in a position right now to shake a lot of things loose. So if this is happening to us, then dang it, take advantage of it, shake things loose, and get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Oh, sure. No problem. Thank you so much, Kelly, and thank you for all the good work that you do for the Commonwealth. We appreciate that and having a progressive voice in Frankfurt.
Great.
It's much needed.
Thank you.
So nonetheless, we'll be back here in a little bit. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU, LPFM, Lexington Community Radio.